Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin, of course, driving another Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
That's right. We're featuring the 2015 Hyundai Sonata Limited. Lots of great features on the Hyundai Sonata Limited, including the ability to either have a nice warm seat when you get in or have an air-conditioned cooled seat when you get in. That's a feature you don't see every day. The heated steering wheels come in handy, though, in these cold days. I can tell you that right now. And a very nice push-button start. All you need is the key fob in your pocket. You put your foot on the brake, press the push button, and you're running. Simple as that. And again, one of the great features that we talked about earlier in the week, the ability to open up the trunk without even using your hand. It's just one of the many features on the 2015 Hyundai Sonata Limited, and you can see them, the one I'm driving, later on this week and weekend, or you can see the options that you have available to you at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury. And you can see the Hyundai dealership for all the details on the America's Best Warranty.
Okay, that's Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now to bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Ben, welcome. How tough was it to cover recruiting, especially in the last week, because down the stretch, nobody really knew really how many numbers they could or could not get?
Well, it's always really a hectic couple of weeks. I think it's sort of funny, though, at the same time, because so much for your average recruiting class is pretty straightforward. You know, these guys have been committed for a while, or at least most of them have, and then, you know, they stay committed and sign their letters of intent and send them in, and that's all done for. You know, Penn State has been able to, over the past couple of years, for the most part, to kind of avoid those last-minute, surprises in a negative sense. Certainly, Penn State added a couple guys in the last 24, 48 hours that sort of helped that class out, but I think, you know, really, it's been helpful for guys like me who follow the recruiting to chase all these guys down to find out what's going on, and then to have them all, you know, do what they said they were going to do is definitely helpful. You see some of these programs yesterday who are getting letters of intent from two different guys who are sending them to three different schools, and people's moms are hiding their letters in the basement, and there's just, you know, this never-ending sort of drama that goes on. But I think it's been great because Penn State's sort of been able to haul these guys in, and James Franklin's always said, you know, if you want to take other visits, that's fine, don't commit. And I think for the most part, you've seen all these guys commit, stay committed, and it sort of made everything a little bit easier for the rest of them.
Right. How do you feel about the positional balance? Because they had to obviously start recouping numbers and depth. How did you view the positional balance on this team?
I think it's all right. Franklin said yesterday that they're under the numbers, especially in offense, at just about every position that they would like to be. But Josh Gattis at the same time said, you know, they basically recruited an entire defense, which is true when you look at how the class sort of balanced out. I think it's going to take a little while for Penn State to get to a place where they feel comfortable about the skill on a 3-deep roster, on a 2-deep roster, across the entire team. But I don't think that this recruiting class did anything but help that cause, anything but, you know, get talent across the board on both sides of the ball to kind of, you know, give these guys not only people that can play, but I think, you know, Franklin's talked about it before that depth issues impact your practice. They impact the ability for these players that are maybe not playing a lot to get this good quality time on the practice field. And I think the more talent you have on the roster, the better off everybody is. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, Penn State achieved that goal of, you know, getting more talent in State College.
And the numbers, I think what he said, they'll be somewhere between 78 and 82 when this is all done. When you look at that compared to the fact that we use, 41 scholarship guys against Michigan State, 41 scholarship guys against Boston College, Have you felt now, starting with Boston College, that maybe the program has turned the football corner on this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're certainly starting to make that progress. Like you said, Franklin says that they're in that high 70s, low 80s area in terms of total scholarship players. But at the same time, a lot of these guys are going to redshirt. Some of these guys are going to get hurt. Some of them are just going to take time to get to the point where they're going to impact you positively. So the number of players that Penn State has come week one against Temple that are going to make an impact on the rest of the season, you know, that number is going to be less than 85. And that number is going to be less than 85 for nearly every program in the country. But I think definitely when you look at pure numbers of talent, pure numbers in terms of guys that are going to have potential to make an impact down the road, there's no doubt that Penn State sort of turned that corner and has sort of been able to recoup a lot of the losses that they've had over the past couple of years. You know, these are great guys on this roster. There's no doubt about the fact that Penn State's had great players in terms of people, but I think that everybody knows that, you know, skill positions and just at every aspect and every turn of the roster could improve in skill and talent and ability to perform. And I think, you know, for as great as those guys are, Penn State's made some strides as of late to sort of fill in that talent gap that has maybe been lacking as of the past couple seasons.
All right. Now moving forward, he made it seem yesterday. Now, we also know they do have two availables. They can save them for next year if they want, or they can fill them now. What was the sense that you had from him about the last two?
I think he kind of definitely covered all of the bases in terms of what they can do with those scholarships. I think he kind of led on with the idea that Penn State might look for some transfer opportunities. I think those are always going to give you the sort of chance to get a guy who's been physically prepared for Division I football, a guy who's maybe got a little experience at a higher level than high school, both on and off the field, that can kind of help you right away. But at the same time, you know, there's advantages to helping, you know, the players that you have in the program, maybe giving a walk-on a scholarship, giving someone who didn't have a scholarship and sort of rewarding them, because you don't want to go out and try and bring in a lot of talent from different places and kind of have your roster be this awkward mix of incoming players who are recruited and going to go through the program and go through all the hoops and everything, and then these guys that have been brought in to sort of, you know, supplement Penn State in areas where they need help immediately. Certainly, though, you know, anytime that you get a guy like Paris Palmer to come up from the JUCO level to impact you immediately, you're not going to find very many negatives in that route. So I think Penn State will explore all of their options, but I wouldn't be surprised in the very end if they go and find a walk-on who's maybe a senior or something like that, give him a scholarship, sort of reward him for, you know, the amount of time and effort that he's put in at his own expense.
All right, the basketball part. The little things add up to big things. When you watch Penn State down the stretch in games, what are a couple little things you think are getting away from them that maybe the other guy is getting?
Well, I think if you watched last night's game, I think one of the things that's become sort of a trend, and maybe you don't agree with this, that Penn State doesn't have a lot of options in those end-of-game situations. I think we've seen Donovan Jack, who's been a guy who's made timely baskets. We've seen Brandon Taylor, especially last night, make those two threes that sort of keep Penn State right within reach.
Right.
But when it comes down to, we need someone to make this shot, we need someone to, you know, keep the ball in play, it's really been DJ Newbill, and certainly it's hard to say that that's an equation that isn't going to work 95% of the time, but we've seen some of these games where DJ, you know, everyone in the building, everyone watching the game knows who's going to get the ball, and it's easy to defend that kind of thing. And I think if Penn State can kind of build that second option late in a game that's a viable threat to make the same basket that DJ is trying to make, you know, I think that'll help Penn State a long way. But I think at the same time, you know, we've seen untimely turnovers by Penn State late in games. You know, Penn State's down four with a little over 7 seconds to go, and Ross Travis can't get the ball inbounds. And you might say that game is over at that point anyway, but in theory, you know, you have a chance to win it and you can't get the ball inbounds, and Maryland gets it back, and that's basically the game. So I think little things like that, little mistakes, will cost you down the stretch. And I think you've seen all of these teams that have come away with these wins against Penn State have either made the timely shot, they've kept the hold on the ball when they've had to, or they've really just been able to stop whatever Penn State's done. And some of that has to do with the options Penn State has, and some of it, you know, is just a little bit of bad luck.
All right, so now they're at this, and it seems the other part of the luck factor is that one second you have Brandon Taylor playing seemingly his best basketball, and then you lose him for two games. Then you get him back to a point. Julian Moore is starting to play some of his best basketball in his young career. I think you feel that he's got even more in him. Then all of a sudden he's sick, you don't have him. That's playing a little bit into this as well.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously anytime, especially when you have Julian Moore coming off probably his best, you know, right, game as a Division I basketball player last week, to come back into this game to try and follow it up and then end up being sick. You get Brandon Taylor back, then you lose an inside presence. You know, but like you said, I was listening to you guys earlier on my drive home, that's the sort of thing that every, you know, every team has to deal with across the board, including Maryland. And how you recover from that is really what sort of differentiates good teams from teams that are, you know, in the position that Penn State's been in right now. And I think some of that, for as much experience as Penn State has on its roster, I think, you know, Geno Thorpe is a guy who's played a lot of basketball, but still at the end of the day, he's pretty young. Shep Gardner has, to his credit, really not lost any confidence despite not shooting the ball at an overly great clip overall. So I think some of these guys are just sort of still figuring out their way, and I think once you see one or two of them kind of turn that corner, you know, some of these games might end up going Penn State's way.
Right now they got Nebraska coming in for the Thon game on Saturday. Nebraska's a team that at home plays extremely well, and on the road they really have had their ups and downs. For Penn State, they're in a rough stretch right now. How badly do they need this game Saturday?
I think they absolutely need it. I think any time that you have an opportunity to play a team at home that is on fairly level playing field with where you are in terms of results and how they've played as a team, I think you have to feel like you have to come away with that win. And Nebraska has been the kind of team that's looked really good one night and looked kind of the sort of struggle the very next evening. So I think, you know, Penn State's got to be able to control Petaway. They've got to be able to sort of contain Shields and Pitchford. It's a roster of guys that are a lot like Penn State, you know, and sort of hit or miss. I think Petaway is probably the best player in the Big Ten that is can manage to make a shot from 30 feet and immediately have a heat check the next possession. he's a great player. There's no doubt about it. But I think, you know, if you can get him off his game a little bit, that's going to help your cause a lot. And I think that's going to be the kind of thing that Penn State needs to do this weekend, because there's no doubt about it, with a crowd, they're going to get a crowd for a Thon game. They're going to need a win. You know, all those things going together. You know, Pat said last week that they're only a few, you know, they're essentially ahead of schedule of where they were with their wins last year. And that's certainly one way to look at it. And I think that Penn State definitely needs a win against Nebraska this weekend, because you're not going to get a lot of good games, a lot of opportunities to win in the Big Ten. And when you have a game like this come up where you feel like you match up pretty well and you're playing at home, that you're going to have to come away with that win.
Ben, as always, thanks so much. Ben Jones, statecollege.com. Kevin Herr's complete analysis and breakdown of the interview in a moment, as only he can, on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles. There should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Hello?
Hi, Eric. This is Terry from Farmers Insurance. Any changes regarding your home or car?
Well, I started carpooling with some friends from work.
No problem. With the extra people in the car, we want you to stay safe, so let me update your liability limits.
Perfect.
Until you close the gaps in your insurance, you could be living dangerously. To find out more, visit farmers.com. We'll help you know the gaps and lose all the...
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
You are someone who doesn't compromise, and you're never willing to settle. So why are you wearing glasses with just any progressive lenses? See the difference with Varilux, the number one progressive lens brand, and enjoy sharp vision and smooth transitions at any distance. Varilux is the only progressive lens brand with lenses designed using wave technology. Ask your eye care professional about Varilux and never compromise your vision.
The many fine programs offered by the Salvation Army in Sunbury have begun. Their Tuesday music programs provide an intro to music theory and more to kids in grades 2 through 12 at 4:30 p.m. Wednesday, they offer women's ministries to women between 14 and 50 at 4 p.m. It helps in enhancing relationships between women and promotes Christian bonding. Thursdays at 4:30, the youth programs teach kids in grades K through 12 valuable life lessons. Call 570-286-4131 for more. The Salvation Army, South 4th Street, Sunbury, doing the most good.
Johnny Holiday was telling me last night a series of great Howard Cosell stories. Did you hear the Al Michaels Howard Cosell story in Kansas City? And I'm going to get this wrong, I think.
I don't think so.
They were doing Monday night. I don't know if they were doing Monday Night Football or they were doing the World Series, something. They're in Kansas City. And ABC always sets you up with a limo. Very much the way Learfield does with you on Bucknell Football.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wouldn't brag about it. The rest of us drive our own cars. And they're going through Kansas City, and I guess they're in a what you would call a bad area. And the limo pulls up to a red light. And on the corner, there are these two guys about ready to engage in a brawl. And you know, Al's in the back seat with Howard, and Al's like, geez, look at that, basically. And Howard Cosell gets out of the car. And the limo driver says, Mr. Cosell, what are you doing? Mr. Cosell, get back in the car. And Al Michaels like, Howard, get back in the car. And he goes over, and they're like getting ready to go at it. It's a group around all things. He says, what do you think you're doing? He says, for one thing, you're holding your left too low. He says, your opponent, who doesn't have any clue whatsoever of pugilistic skill, is still going to be able to tear you apart because you're holding your left too low. He says, so before there's any bloodshed. And they stopped. They stopped.
I thought he was getting out to do play-by-play of the whole event.
Well, he's going in a typical... But you know what? He had the ability. One thing he had a clock in his head. And his ability to ad-lib was unmatched. And a lot of people don't realize that he would sit there and, for example, did you ever carry Speaking of Sports?
Growing up, I've heard it before, but I don't know if I ever worked at a place that had it.
I can't remember if it was 60 seconds or whatever it was.
I think it was a minute, yeah. I think it was a minute.
And they said that without a watch, he could ad lib it and hit 60 every time.
With a cigar in his
mouth. Yeah, well, maybe. Justin Brocious sent us on our Facebook page with Tim Frazier making the getting a 10-day contract with the Philadelphia 76ers. You want to know what Taylor Battle's chances are getting to the NBA? It's a good question. Taylor right now has been playing in the highest league in Italy. And that's worked out well for him so far. Obviously, like anybody, he has NBA aspirations. But as of right now, he's been playing in the Italian league, which brings with it several perks, which includes money, obviously. But also, they pay for a lot of things for you, apartments, cars, things like that, that makes your life a lot easier. And as of right now, he's pretty well settled in the Italian league, likes playing over there, obviously would like to get back to the States and play here. But he's opted for the European option as opposed to the D-League. It doesn't really matter because they both our avenues to getting here. Mike Muscala took the European route. Tim Frazier took the D-League route. So you can see that there's an avenue open there. But as of right now, he is not hooked in or affiliated with any team in the NBA, but he is playing basketball in Italy. So I hope that answers his question. But that's good. Two local guys getting into the NBA, into the show. And there are only 390 of those spots. It's very limited.
You know, earlier,
390 spots.
A few minutes now, earlier. Oh, go ahead. Finish that thought. Sorry.
Now, the way ESPN covers the NBA is a little absurd. Today, I was listening to a SportsCenter update. Breaking news. They literally said, breaking news. Jacques Vaughn fired as the head coach of the Orlando Magic. Quick show of hands. How many of you knew Jacques Vaughn was the head coach of the Orlando
Magic? I was going to say, I didn't even know who the head coach of the Magic was.
Well, it was Jacques Vaughn. Jacques Vaughn, gone.
Earlier, you were talking about Howard Cosell. If you ever want to read a good book about Howard Cosell, I Never Played the Game. It was a really good memoir.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that very much.
He decried what he referred to as the jockocracy of sportscasting.
Yes.
You do not have to be an athlete to be a sportscaster. You have to have a love and a passion for it and an ability to learn. Now, look, all of us played the game, for example, whether it was high school, some went to college, others in pros. But everybody has different roles in this, for example. Some are talk show hosts like a Mike Golic paired with a Mike Greenberg. Or you're Dan Patrick. But others fall into that analyst category. You're still a sportscaster, but you're an analyst. It's just a different role. Where Dan Patrick can lead, knows how to lead, and Tony Dungy knows how to answer.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, great to have you with us. Thanks to Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, and also to Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell, for joining us on the show today. Kevin Herr alongside. We have now begun our fourth year of the show.
I didn't realize that until you made mention of that. I'm like, four?
Well, we've completed three. I said we've begun our fourth year.
Well, no, I know. I just figure one of these days I may actually be halfway decent at this after, you'd think I'd have enough practice by now.
You're the one they love. Look at Cindy calls the show with all this passion. I need to treat you nicer. Meanwhile, co-workers of the station back me up. I don't know if that's,
I don't know what that means. Right now, I'm watching Bodie Miller's downhill where he crashed earlier today.
And that's exactly why co-workers back me up. All right. Bodie Miller retired.
Well, he stepped away for about 11 months, but this was his first return. His first time back on the slope.
Well, and he crashed.
Yeah, it looked like he clipped one of the gates about halfway down at about 75 miles an hour, and was right before a little bit of a lift, and doesn't seem to be overly hurt, but did slide down the hill quite a bit.
Skis broke away and everything, so. I would hope so. It's a hill.
Well, and then he waves to the crowd after he's sliding on his rear end down the hill as well. Almost like he's going for a sleigh ride without the sled.
How graphic. All right.
Well, I'm just trying to make sure everybody knows. I'm trying to describe. This is radio,
Okay. Okay. Now you have people looking for music.
Steve, I have Joe on the line from Greensburg for you.
Thank you for saving the show. Welcome.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Joe?
Well, just want to talk a little about the basketball game last night. It's
I thought you wanted to talk about Bodie Miller.
No.
That makes you an American. Good.
It's really getting frustrating. You know, I see the same thing at the end of those games where they try to get go to DJ Newbill, and to be honest with you, they're not going to win a game until somebody else makes a bucket, and they've got to start trusting those other players. Those other players, they can make plays. They just got to start trusting them, because they just give the ball to DJ Newbill, and it's 1-on-5. I mean, they know where the ball's going.
Yeah.
And he throws up some bad shots. I mean, he gets them there with the great points he has throughout the games. But at the end of the games, they've got to change the way they do things, because, somebody else is going to have to win a game for him at the end. It's not going to be DJ Newbill. I don't know how you feel about that, but
it's good. I think you make a good point, because I don't think you can just do it with one guy down the stretch. And I'm in full agreement with you, Joe. Brandon Taylor needs to step up and hit a shot. Shep Garner needs to step up, make a shot. And if they do, Joe, it then frees up DJ Newbill to then make his contribution and make a shot. You have to have multiple contributors down the stretch, because if you have multiple contributors, that now gets the defense off balance. Penn State is gone. Yeah, please, Joe, go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Penn State has now gone, let's look at the last, 14 years of this thing. They've gone from an impossible margin of error where they were losing how many games, Joe, 15 to 25 points in the Jerry Dunn, Ed DeCellis era, and then in parts of the Pat Chambers era, okay? Mm-hmm. To now getting to a point where they're losing games with a small margin of error by 3, 6, 2, and that frustration of the inability to get over the hump. They have to be so precise down the stretch. They have to be the team, for example, that can't make the mental mistake of stepping into the lane on a second free throw and giving a guy who had just gone 0-for-2 at the free throw line a third chance to get the free throw, which he makes. They can't be the team that when they get to the free throw line with Shep Garner, you can't go 0-for-2. It is psychologically damaging to a team down the stretch. I've seen it so many times. When a guy goes 0-for-2, it gives the other guy a lift, and all of a sudden you feel like 3 points have gone off the board, and he went 0-for-2 in that spot last night. He needs to play. If you make at least one of two, now everybody feels like, okay, yep, still right there, still feel good. We got something out of it. 2-for-2, you feel like you had a great possession. And they also have to be the team that with 7.5 seconds to go, you have to get the ball inbounds.
Yeah, talk about Ross Travis. I just don't know. Maybe it's time to start putting in the younger guy there. He made two shots there where he was right point blank, and he missed there, and he didn't even get it there. And the other one, he threw it so hard off the backboard. I know he's a great rebounder, but he's not helping him on the offensive side.
Joe, you're right now. You're talking to the choir right here. I'm listening to you. You're right. Defense and rebounding have to be his cornerstones. They have to be.
Yeah.
Offensively, he's got to be a guy that gets offensive rebounds and stick backs and follows. He can't be a primary option. And I think he's taking himself away from being a primary option because he's proven he can't be. So, because the air ball missed. I mean, I'm courtside, Joe. The air ball was 2 feet short.
I know.
And the other shot, you bricked it.
Well, my biggest concern is they're losing all these games, and I don't know how future recruits are perceiving this. You know, if they're looking at Coach Chambers and, he's losing. I mean, I like Coach Chambers, but I think he's got to make some changes going down the stretch there. But I'm just hoping that this doesn't set us back recruiting-wise, because I think he's on a roll that way. But
he is on a roll. No, he is on a roll that way because, I mean, that recruiting class of Reeves, Davis, and Watkins is locked in. The
right.
verbals beyond that are also very strong. And
right.
so that's one of the reasons why, Joe, why I'm a stay the course guy with this thing, because I think it's taken a long time to get it here. Now I want to see if there's something there to take it to that next level based on how he has recruited.
Well, I'm worried about one thing. Next year without DJ Newbill, I'm worried we're going to take a step backwards. I mean,
well, that's a good question. That's a good question because you've got, for example, you'll have Watkins up front. You'll have Taylor. Moore's getting better all the time. Moore was just incredibly sick last night, Joe. He couldn't play. He was.
Yeah, I was wondering what happened there.
Yeah, what happened with him was, I mean, they wouldn't even let him go in the bus to shoot around because they didn't want him around the other players. In other words, they didn't want them getting sick.
Right,
And so, but he's been playing a lot better. Dickerson's a good role player defensively, but you're going to add in Reeves, and Reeves brings a great skill set to the table, slasher, driver, pretty good shooter, too. So they'll be able to replace some of what you're talking about with some kids. And Davis is the kind of kid that has a really good outside shot and is a passer, too.
But one more question, I'll let you go about next year. How do you think Isaiah Washington, I mean, is he a guy that can pick up some offense?
He has an absolutely beautiful shot.
Okay.
You watch him shoot the ball, Joe. Dick Girardi and I have stood in the gym just watching him take some jumpers. He understands elevation, and he understands follow-through. It really is, you like to take couple tapes of it, show it to some kids as to how to shoot a jump shot. He needs the weight room, no question. Came in very slender of build, but Isaiah Washington will be a good player in this program. He won't be a great, awesome, and incredible player, but he's going to have some nights where he knocks down some threes, and he's going to have some nights where he gets shut out initially. But I think eventually you'll see a consistent player that can maybe give them 6 to 8 points a game.
Is he redshirting him now, or is he?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the time, and I needed someone to talk to after watching the last few games. I appreciate it. Thanks.
See, I have Dick Girardi. You have me.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Joe. 800-795-9565. Our number if you'd like to jump in back to close things out in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. The Blue-White Game presented by AAA on April 18th will be a 4 o'clock start. Well, it's going to be a little bit later in the day.
Do you have anything going on the 18th? Are you going to be available for that? Can make myself available if need be. Just trying to do my part.
You can listen.
Which is what I normally end up doing. Hey, I thought this was interesting. There was a story today that the Washington Redskins are trying to lure in season ticket holders. And to do that, they decided to send a little letter thanking fans for their support. You know, talked about the core group that's coming back, including their head coach and GM and defensive coordinator. And they named some players like DeSean Jackson, Trent Williams, Alfred Morris. But in the NFL, typically your quarterback is your high-profile, you know, face of the franchise. RG3 was not mentioned. I wonder if that's a sign of where the Redskins feel they are going with RG3, and it may not be into 2015, into the football season with him.
They benched him for Colt McCoy. What more signs do you need?
Well, I'm just saying, I wonder if that's, you know, more than just the writing on the wall this time.
They benched him for Colt McCoy. How many signs do you need? I don't think they know who the starting quarterback is. That's why they didn't put him on there. I don't think they have any clue who their starting quarterback is.
Well,
I certainly didn't think of him as the Redskins' starting quarterback.
Well, he's definitely not on the list of core players, according to the Redskins' front office.
Yeah, but he hasn't put himself in a position to be with the Redskins' core players.
Agreed.
I mean, Ryan Kerrigan out of Purdue has played really, really well. DeSean Jackson is established. Alfred Morris has done really... You're talking about guys that have established themselves and have played at a very high level. Well, and that's why they're on there.
At this point, I think they only have two quarterbacks on the roster.
What, RG3 and...
And Cousins, yep.
And Kirk Cousins didn't distinguish himself when he played.
He did not get people excited, no.
This is the quandary you have in the NFL at the single most important position in the league. You're very lucky with your team. You have Ben Roethlisberger.
Not many of those come around.
Is very special. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers. You got some other guy. I mean, obviously, Eli Manning's won two Super Bowls, so when he gets there, he knows how to handle the money on the table. I think other guys are really good, like Philip Rivers. Then you get some guys that are good, but not quite, you know, you wonder if they're good enough to take a team over the top, that they really need a lot more help around them to do it. Andy Dalton, Matt Ryan, guys like that. You know, and I know you kid about Andy Dalton all the time, but Andy Dalton is good enough to get his team to the playoffs. Andy Dalton makes enough plays during the regular season to get to the playoffs. The question is that when he gets into those big games against the better teams, he doesn't really perform it at a great level, and neither does his team. Now what do you do? Do you dump him? Well, who do you dump him for? Because if you're going to dump him, you're going to have to dump him for somebody who's better. Well, you're not going to be able to draft one, in all likelihood, that far down. The Dan Marino 26th overall pick doesn't happen that often. And there aren't that many guys like that out there.
Well, in your
mind... Look at all the guys getting picked number one that are quarterbacks that don't make it.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. In your mind, how many quarterbacks, legitimate first-round, even second-round quarterbacks, are there in this draft? Three?
Yeah, three.
All right, and then you look at the picks right now. The Bucs need a quarterback. Titans mm-hmm. need a quarterback. Jags probably don't. Raiders probably don't. They need more of a veteran than they do a young quarterback. Washington.
No, I'll be frank with you. I like Derek Carr a lot.
Well, I do too. But is he ready to start?
I think. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No.
Well, all right.
I like. In fact, you know what? I like him more than I do Alex Smith in the same division.
Well, either way, spots 3 and 4 are probably not going to look at quarterbacks. That puts Washington at 5, the Jets at 6. I would say both of those teams may look at quarterbacks.
They should. They both should look at quarterback.
Then the Bears come in at 7.
They should look at quarterback.
Then you have the Falcons, Giants, and Rams rounding out the top
ten. Rams need a quarterback. Giants and Falcons
right.
do not.
So of the top 10, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, probably 6 of the top 10 teams are in need of a quarterback somewhere along the line.
But I mean, look at the state of football today. Okay, NFC East. Cowboys, Giants, they're finding a quarterback. I'll tell you, the Eagles are in a real quandary right now.
Now, there's a team that's way down the list right now that are looking to move up, possibly.
I mean, is Nick Foles the answer?
No.
A big, big question. Okay, and then the Redskins need a quarterback. Okay, now you go to this. Okay, the NFC Central. Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford. They're okay there. Teddy Bridgewater, I think they're going to ride that for a little while. And the Bears have Jay Cutler, but they're going to need somebody else. Tampa Bay needs somebody. Carolina doesn't. Atlanta doesn't. New Orleans doesn't. Then you go to the West. Seattle doesn't. San Francisco allegedly doesn't, although he needs to, they need to craft it more to his skill set. The Rams need a quarterback. And Arizona, maybe not in this round, needs to consider what they want to do behind Carson Palmer.
They may need one eventually.
Yeah, Patriots don't. Jets, I think, do. The Bills do. Dolphins don't. Steelers don't. Ravens don't. The Browns do need a quarterback. And the Bengals, tough call, but you got to ride. I think you got to keep riding with what you got.
Let's just say maybe if things work out perfectly.
Okay. The Broncos have got to start thinking about post-Peyton Manning at some point.
But and they may have to sooner rather than later.
Well, no, he's going to play this year. But, there's no doubt in my mind he's coming back. The Broncos, Chargers, and the Raiders, I think, are in good shape. Alex Smith is a functional, decent NFL quarterback, but he's not a great NFL quarterback.
I would think of him the same way I think of the gentleman leading the Bengals, too.
Yeah, about the same way. But again, every time you okay, then name me the replacement. And the problem is that every time somebody like you brings it up, they can't name the replacement. Because you're in a bad draft spot. It's hard to draft where they're drafting to get a guy that's going to replace him that's a better player.
And you don't see
Who's the better player?
Well, and you don't see – it's not like you can sit there in free agency and say, okay, well, maybe we could get this guy, or this guy is probably in a backup spot now that he might be available. Not too many of those either.
No. I mean, Indianapolis is in great shape. Houston needs a quarterback. Jacksonville's okay. Tennessee needs a quarterback. Houston needs a quarterback. Yeah, I think they're hoping Ryan Mallett's going to be that guy. But somebody explain to me why Ryan Mallett wasn't the guy in New England.
That's why I think this draft might be very entertaining in the first round, because there's a lot of teams that need a high-profile position and may not be able to get that position where they are in the draft.
Well, you better be completely sold on Winston or Mariota. The Colorado State kid you can get somewhere in the first 10. But how much do you give up to get that quarterback? And the Redskins are paying for the RG3 trade in two ways. A, his lack of performance, and B, the number of guys they missed out on because they ended up being picked by the Rams. And the Rams picked four guys that are contributors.